7 p.m. on Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022, at Davies Room, Room 6. Members present are Representative Crump, Representative Ortiz, Vice Chair, Representative Fields, Representative Toyer, and myself, Representative Zilkowski Chair. If the record reflects that there are quorum to conduct business, the President of the Room is able to reconcile with your cell phones, and once again, I remotely present yourself if you are not speaking. Before we begin, I would like to thank the Administration of the House General Affairs Secretary for my grades and the Trustee Writer from the Journal of Loyal Miss Jackson here today. Today, the Human Charter of Affairs Committee, who is here tonight, is totally on the top of the bar called the Royal Webska, who is here in the book of the National Public Housing Information Administration. From the last meeting of the Village Corporation Association, Christine O'Connor, and from the Boston Telephone Association, Michael Hill and Christina Salmon, Gregory Stubbard, the United Police Council, Brown Street Community Stock Cooperative, and Stephen Dutzner from the Southwest Region Schools. Last week, Professor Andy Burke with NTIA. Mr. Burke, please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony, and please know that we have a flight deck that's along with the basis.
Advise us to advance to the next slide when we are ready for us to proceed. All right, thank you so much. I'm privileged to be here and to be talking to you all today. This is a very important subject, and I know that we are dedicated to working with you to advance the cause of crimes in Alaska and throughout the country. So my name is Andy Burke. Currently, I'm the Special Representative for Broadband and Administration. Stationed at the Department of Commerce, National Telecommunications and Information Administration. But, as you can tell from my accent, I come from the southern part of the country. I was a state senator in Tennessee for 2 terms. And I was the mayor of the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, for 2 terms as well. So I know a little bit about the legislature life. Thank you all for your service. Appreciate and know how much work it takes and how you can have production sacrifices in doing it. So thanks for your work. I'll also tell you that Chattanooga is a place that I'm proud of the work that we did. So we were the first big city. It was a municipal fiber network. So the city government, through our electric utility, helped put out a 600-square-mile fiber network that reached every single home and every single business in our area. So no matter where you live, no matter what neighborhood, no matter what you did for a living, you had the fastest connection in the Western Hemisphere at your door. And we leveraged that for economic development and ultimately for equity as well. One last thing that I did before I left office was that I led a coalition and we gave 3 alternate high-speed broadband for every Title I family. So if you have a child on food or things lunch, and Chattanooga, you're now able to get ultra high speed broadband for free. Again, knowing how much this means to your constituents to be a part of the country. So I want to just give you a brief overview and then answer any questions that you might have about some of the things that are going on. So if you can advance to the next slide, please. Thank you so much. So the President has made a commitment that every American will have access to reliable, affordable broadband, and the good news for all of us is that a bipartisan group of legislators has agreed and voted to this, and that is resulted in the bipartisan infrastructure bill that you see here called IIJA. But we all know it as the bipartisan infrastructure bill. A big piece is broadband. Again, I'll say this, unusually for this happened in Washington, D.C., but this is bipartisan, and it's really fantastic that so many people are interested in making sure that this happens. So there are 4 components to it, and if you go to the next slide, please, you'll see that the Infrastructure Act puts together about $65 So that's likely to happen later on in 2022. perhaps about what's the best way to implement this $3 spectrum, and a 145 tribal partner show up. So this is a huge beat for us, and we're very focused on it. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I just want to end by saying that the President of the United States is focused on this. I think he views this as a legacy. I certainly feel the pressure he does, the White House, and trying to make sure that these dollars go out efficiently, effectively, and to help people all across the country. We certainly understand the issues that are facing in Alaska. Always happy to hear more. This is a transformative moment. It really is, and I'm excited to be participating, and thank you for your interest and your partnership, because, as I said, most of these dollars are going to end up going out on the state level, and we need your help and partnership. And I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Burke, for joining us this morning. This is Teresa Lefty. I do have a couple of questions. So, with respect to the various tranches or buckets of money that you've outlined on this particular slide, is it correct to understand that the e-element on digital equity bonds are funding our state administered, where the tribal funding of grants that are provided directly from BPA to the tribes, is that a correct understanding of the money that is being deployed?
You got it really well with one little asterisk, and that is there is also a portion of the digital equity money that is NPIA established. So about $2.75 billion, $1.25 is going to come through NPIA, the rest $1.5 billion comes from the state. But yes, you are right about that.
And then just a little question. The middle mile bucket of money that is attached, how that's being administered, can you clarify that for me?
Each of these buckets, there's already been a notice of funding opportunity for tribal. In mid-May, the infrastructure bill gave us 180 days to start the process of getting out these dollars with the broadband equity and access and deployment piece. And so in mid-May, that 180 days runs out, and you're going to see a notice of funding opportunity for the broadband equity access and deployment. In short order, you will see, not long after that, several notices of funding opportunity for digital equity and middle mile. And then there will be a process. The digital equity will start in the state planning piece, and funds will be released. Again, there's funding from the federal government for the state planning. The middle mile will be that the entire process, or a big piece of the process of how people who want to do middle mile can apply, what that's going to look like, what are the factors that we're going to explore, and put that together. That should start sometime this late spring, midsummer. And that's because people will always remind me there's another employee from NTIA on here. And if I say too much more, then the NTIA police come in taking me in the NTIA jail. So I can't say too much about what all those factors are, but that'll be kind of something in these next few months.
Well, Mr. Murphy, you certainly are. Yeah, I need to put you in a position where somebody can say that there's a better neighborhood. So, yes, there is a minimal portion of the money funding also directly funded by NTIA and not administered through states, is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Thank you. Can you give us an update? You indicated that the tribal funds that are being funded directly by NTIA to tribes are for federal and big use. Can you give us a status of those reimbursements and any sort of obstacles NTIA is facing with respect to reviewing applications? And do you have sufficient resources within your office to provide the support that's needed for tribes across the country?
That's a really great question. Our tribal team they can't out these dollars. And so, you know, we're looking for ways that also tribes can learn from each other. So creating some kind of tribe connections, but I'm always happy to hear ideas or thoughts and take them back to make sure that we're being as helpful as we can be.
I'm curious to better understand, I guess, if there are plans where tribes are able to call dedicated staff to help navigate them through sort of this maze of new funding that's available, and we can end up providing all the information that NTI needs to provide them with successful grant funding, or the tribe will get the funding.
There is dedicated staff for that, but as I said, we have a lot of tribes that need substantial assistance, and so we're doing the best that we can. If you go to that next slide, while we're at it, we'll see a place where you can, people can contact us. I'll also be happy to give you my email address. I think that your staff already has it. One of my jobs is to be the connector between state and local governments and the administration and the Department of Commerce about these dollars. So if you have feedback or other questions or comments, I'm happy to take those.
We have another question
from
Representative
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Burke. I appreciate it. And on the bid funding, it's a contact plan. It says a formula-based grant for masters, so these dollars are going to be coming to the state. What kind of formula is used? And then it sounded like, I guess, is it sort of like there's phases to the funding? And sort of the bid funding as far as the digital upgrade and the mobile, as far as having like the rollouts like that.
Yeah, so you are right on all of those pieces. So the bid funding, every state and territory, well, territory is a little bit more. Every state gets a minimum of $100 million. So that's just no matter what, you get a minimum of $100 million. And then there's a second formula that will be more explicit in the notice of funding opportunities. But there are the Federal Communications Commission sometime in the next several months is going to come out with the maps that say exactly where people have internet and don't have internet and who might be quote unserved and underserved, and there are definitions for that. But what will happen then is that we will go through and look at how many people are in each state that are unserved and underserved and use that, the total funding with the people who are unserved and underserved, to then allocate the dollars to each state and territory. Does that make sense? Does it kind of get the general, how many people in the United States are totally unserved or underserved? How many are in Alaska? And then that starts to get us to the Alaska funding. And so the only thing I'll tell you is as these maps come out, as legislators for your areas, the state, I'm sure, will be paying attention to this, is there will be opportunities to say the maps aren't accurate, and you need to make sure that you do that because that will determine the funding. Usually we're going to say, oh, no, everything's great here. That's not going to fix it. Say, no, we practice pepper. This is one of those moments where it's too hard to say, no, these people don't have what they need. And that will change the funding. And then on the status, on the rollout, you're correct. If you think about the tribal piece, we already had some openings because that was initially started rates and stuff out there, maybe we'll come up next. But that doesn't mean that's where the money comes out, because the way that the timing is staggered will be different. So the processes will be different in each piece. That's when the bat goes off, but that's not necessarily where the rates are, if that makes sense. Because each one of these has a different, like how long it takes you, if Alaska, for example, did a digital equity plan very quickly, then it might be able to get funding more quickly than it would get the broadband equity access $1. Okay? I think it gets too confusing, but hopefully that you understand that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, in terms of the timing of that, is it the goal, or do you have a sense of how long it will take to get all those dollars deployed? It seems like for your agency, I just wonder if this is more, money than you are typically trying to deploy. There's just a lot of work, just to get the dollars out the door as well. But do you think it's like calendar year 22? The goal to get through all these phases in this calendar year, or do we forget those in 2023? For us to get a sense of this, we have our fiscal year goal, but the federal fiscal year is the October 1, the September 30 rate, so we're already offset that way, and then one of the challenges for us in these federal dollars is trying to think, at what point they come in, are they going to come in while we're in session, again, if we're going to have a session, so just for us to plan and be thinking about.
Well, you're welcome to come to some of my meetings. I've got a meeting after this. This is exactly this question. You're asking really good questions that we don't really know the answer to and figure out the answer to. This is where I meant going to the NCIA journal. So I'll just say that the timing will come out in these notices of funding opportunities, at least to some extent. The one piece that you should know is that there is a 4-year hourly limit on the sub-grants in the Broadband Equity Access Deployment Act that says that you have to have the stuff built out. So you'll see that's in the act. There'll be notices of funding opportunity that's going to have these, some amount of timing pieces put forward in the And again, until they come out mid-May, there are the costs still up in the air a little bit anyway.
Thank you.
Did you have a hard stop with us with respect to time? Well, I did, but I'll go over. My hard stop is at 12:30, but I'll have to just answer questions for a few more minutes, and then I actually have a discussion about some of this stuff, so I'm going to at some point go participate in that, make sure that the state and city's viewpoints are represented. So I'm happy to have you be there for another couple minutes.
Okay, absolutely.
My question for you is related to IFLA and what IFLA has to say about what the NPIA has to say about providers and regulations or what parameters are set in relationship to providers in particular areas where there's only one provider, no competition, those kinds of things. What kind of guidelines or parameters are set so that providers don't take advantage of, all this money that seems to be cutting forward. Yeah, so that's my question.
Yeah, it's a good question.
is there federal law, authorizing federal law or regulation that dictate the type of technology infrastructure that the U.S. or the country has? Or as you can imagine, any state as expansive as Alaska, the development of infrastructure exists within varying degrees from singular providers that my colleague just mentioned, some communities are a single provider that has a certain type of technology that's been deployed. There might be other communities that are pursuing different types of technology, whether fiber or low orbit satellite or microwave systems. Can you speak to any of the authorizing federal language that dictates the type of language that is eligible for this funding?
So we are tech agnostic. We will fund any type of tech that has a minimum of 100 download and 20 upload speed and reliability within the definition that we put out. So you have to meet that speed requirement and you have to meet the reliability requirement. Within that, we expressly provide a preference for fiber because fiber is future-proof. So when you build out fiber, you are making sure that you have infrastructure for decades, which isn't necessarily the case with every technology. However, even though our preference and hope is to see fiber, we do find are willing to fund other technologies because we know that fiber is not necessarily appropriate everywhere because of geography, because of density, because of all kinds of other reasons.
Well, the NTIA would like to fund $65 billion in fiber development in Alaska. We certainly welcome that opportunity.
Of 32 public meetings over the course of this summer.
seems like it was closer than 2 hours on the technical subgroup. Was the other screen that listed the numbers of the technical subgroup, and then a little later how the chief decided to pause the subgroup, and together that's the full task force. And I did want to point out, particularly in this committee, that we have really great representation from rural Alaska. So some of the discussion groups on the recommendations in the following slides were, I would say, all were very informed by our folks in rural Alaska. I myself grew up in rural Alaska, so it was a real privilege. It's really exciting to work with this group. The vision that everybody had for just robust broadband throughout Alaska, I thought was really exciting and encouraging to work together. So I just went through some of the main recommendations. There were a lot of recommendations, and they're all in the appendix now. And so if you wanted to walk through them and run quickly, just flip through the appendix. Some of the highlights from the technical subgroup. First and foremost, broadband needs to be available to all Alaskans. This is one of my favorite sentences in the entire task force. It's so simple, but so powerful. And to do that, our chore, our task from the whole task force was to define where we have gaps. Where can Alaskans not get broadband service? So we said, what is a gap? And you'll see this really mirrors the infrastructure bill language, which became statute about 3 weeks after the AFCON report. We did have the draft infrastructure bill language. It was available as we were deliberating in creating our report. So we were optimistic that that would become law, and we really mirrored a lot of that infrastructure law. So anywhere there's a gap where you are underserved or you're unserved, is if you don't have access to 100 by 20 megabit service with a latency that's sufficient for real-time applications like we're doing this morning. As we saw definitely during the pandemic, you need to be able to get on a video call, a Zoom call, distance health, distance education, really driving what we need in our broadband service. You also need data allowances. You have to be able to use enough on your broadband connection for it to be useful to you. And as Mr. Burke mentioned, reliability is very important. We also said that we need to identify rollout needs. Often where the gap is because there is not a robust mobile connection. And we also made a point to recognize that standards change over time. As we all know, what we were doing with our internet connection 10 years ago has almost no resemblance to what we're doing here today and what we will need to do in 5 or even 10 years. We said, similar to Mr. Mark, we have problems with fiber rollout, but note, and I'm going to tell both of this, where feasible and practical. We know that we have the most, I'll call it the most dramatic terrain and climate in the United States. We use all technologies today, satellite, microwave, fiber, and we will continue to need those technologies. But where possible, the task force said that fiber is preferred, and we've got to support and explain that context within the infrastructure law as well, and the task force will mirror that. And this was particularly, I like this point, it really came from some of our rural technical subgroup task force members. As this funding comes into Alaska, it's important that it doesn't create a bigger divide than we have already. You know, some areas have phenomenal broadband connectivity. Others really actually have none, and we don't want that to get worse. This funding should be deployed in a way that we want to level up and everybody has the access they need. We also recommended and recognized we need accurate data. How do we know where there is a gap where you don't have broadband connectivity? We need maps. Those are under development. The dates have been set for the data collections this fall. So those maps will likely be ready probably about this time next year. Those maps will end up defining how much funding every state gets, as Mr. Burke mentioned.
Heather,
I have a question.
Thanks, Mr. Dyer, for spending a lot of time making the meeting. Everyone should have a lot of activities. First, on the maps. Of course, based on this talk, there are sometimes
the service patterns like, will that end up being finance, that's their kind of service, or serve, you break it down, they're donating, and maybe that has to go on 47 geographic area.
Aboriginal representative field, great question, because you've identified a real problem with the existing methodology in broadband mapping. Mark says, if you have a census block, which in Alaska can be huge, and you have one location in that entire block concerned today, that flags the entire block as served, which we know is not accurate, but that's the methodology required by law in reporting. That is not how these new maps are being done. Right now, the FCC is developing Fabric, which will identify every what they call broadband serviceable locations and house cabin will be on this fabric. That will be available publicly June 30th. And at that point, all the broadband providers go in and say, I service this dot, this dot, not this dot. And they will report what speeds or technologies they're using. So this is going to finally get rid of that census block discrepancy problem you described.
That is one more question, Sarah. The epic part of me that asked to do this presentation was to be up on the 100 downline bottom compared to whatever country around the globe has the best broadband. Does that make sense? How much are we catching up to the kind of strongest performers?
Penetrator representative fields, I would have to go Google that stat, but if you look at South Korea, if you didn't read Google to South Korea, you're going to see phenomenal internet speeds. But then remember, they're a very compact geography. It is very different. The nice thing with 100 by 20, it is more than adequate for what we're doing here today. If there are multiple kids doing distance education or telehealth at once, and the law's prioritization on being scalable or it can be upgraded, no, offering is not going to be the standard in 5 years. So the law positions are to be upgradable.
Okay, we have security. Thank you for being here today. That question that you just asked about representative fields, relationship to 120, what percentage of Alaska currently has that kind of capability?
Booth Care report has, I want to say the statistic is in the 70% range where you can access Alaska, so I can access gigabit service. So when you look at us on a population base, we are not as far behind as it sometimes seems. But if you're in rural Alaska, you feel like, and you are, so far behind. And I'll confirm that statistic you want to send it to you after the hearing.
Now, actually, if we want to move on, I have a question. I'm not a broadband technology networks expert, but certainly living in Buffalo, which has a much more well-established technology framework than I was surrounding it in that New York Island. There's certainly a time of day when you can sense that there are a lot of people trying to get online, whether it's students or people coming home from work, where the speeds slow way down. And so I'm curious to understand whether the 100 by 20 megabits threshold is enough to support pushing communities beyond that slow down of everybody trying to utilize the same amount of technology at the same time.
Great question, Charles. It's the speed of 100 by 20 by itself is not the problem. The problem is likely that congested nodal pipe. So when we see this running coming in and building out a fiber backbone throughout Alaska to build to all of our hubs and beyond, because of that almost infinite capacity of fiber, you know, once you have a fiber thread in, you change the boxes on either end, and I'm not comfortable here, so I just say the boxes on either end, you can upgrade that capacity so everyone does get that 100 megabits or more. So this will actually relieve what is causing that congestion in a lot of our rural areas.
Like
care workers is lovely. We use Medi-Val and Rescue generally, but then it captures that whole span from Seattle, where we pull internet from, carry through to Anchorage, and then disperse to outlying communities. So it is both that connection between communities and that long-haul connection to pull internet up to Alaska.
That's the middle
one. There are other terms. It's a bit of a term of art. You'll hear people say first mile, second mile. We generally refer to it in Alaska. It's just last mile is in your community. Middle mile is where you need to get beyond your community. One other note on the mapping is the task force recognized that you can spend tens of millions of dollars on mapping, and we didn't want to divert funding from deployment and access to broadband. So we said that a lot of this is going through our future office of broadband. We said the office should take advantage of the work that the FCC is doing, because the FCC is required to do it by law and funded to do it through appropriations. So we knew these phenomenal maps were coming, and we wanted the Office of Broadband to adopt them, scrutinize them, use the challenge process. We really didn't want to divert funding away from just actually connecting communities. And with that, thank you for your great questions. I will pass the call back to Holly to talk about the policy super. Just to help our operating secretaries, because they do have to be on the system to get the pieces of that record.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. This is Holly Bissett for the record. And before I go into the policy subgroup, I did want to talk a little bit about some of the things that Mr. Burke covered and some of the things you may not have heard yet in terms of the MTAA dollars that are coming in. I spoke with MTAA yesterday, and you know, mainly about the fact that it's a little bit slow to get awards out the door and get notified of when the money's coming in. He explained to me that the program first got $1 billion and then there was $2 billion set aside in Niger. That program for tribes in Indian country was overprescribed by $8 billion. I mean, it was $8 billion in total, so there's $5 billion more that's actually needed to connect Indian country and the nation. The other thing I wanted to point out is that there are over 200 communities in Alaska that don't even have 25 free service, which is considered unserved. That's more than underserved, that's unserved. So when we're looking at policy actions as a group, I really wanted to take those things into account. You can see outside who the members of our policy group were. We have some really great actors. testing apps that may be experienced across the state. As mentioned, we're going to have to come up with this Apple Pad, and how we get there, you're going to have to partner with the tribal people that this is impacting the most on the other end, just like Carousel Plastic was talking about out there in Bethel. So those conversations are going to need to take place within the state with our own tribes. And we have a lot of them, and it's going to be a lot of work, but there are regional entities being set up that are going to make that a little bit easier. Go on to the next slide. We need to prioritize local workforce development. So one of the things we recognize early on, and we talked about mental health, and a lot of times mental health can include these microwave towers that are on top of mountaintops. You know, they're fueled by diesel fuel, and they're quite technical little towers, and you have to get up there and maintain them. Some of them mental health have what they call hops when they're going from one microwave tower to the next. Some of them are broadband fiber, are going out 14, 15, sometimes 60 hops to get to, the last mile where they're providing service. So there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be maintained. And unfortunately, in Alaska, it's not always going to be affordable. That'll get us to our next slide, which is all about affordability. We need to recognize that it's an important element, so we need to find the gaps. The policymakers should also recognize that affordability is driven by underlying costs. All those things that I just talked about, between the service providers, state and federal programs, we need to maintain the support that we're currently getting in terms of subsidies, because those costs, the ones that I just talked about, they'll still be there. And we're still going to have to maintain these mountaintop, middle mile, microwave tower type things that are not going to be cheap and will require a helicopter to get up to them. And that was because of the last policy recommendation around the broadband parity adjustment. Very similar to PCEM, this makes a lot of sense, and we can talk about this. But generally, the policy task force really wanted to make sure that we were kind of pre-funding this PCE type parity adjustment with the money that we're getting under the BEAD program. And, of course, that is up to you all. I will be happy to answer any questions, but the most important thing is we have equitable broadband costs across the state of Alaska. One thing you should really know is it does require you by law to provide to unserved areas first when you're funding broadband deployments, and that is a requirement of IGA. We hope to get money out the door quickly, but that, of course, is not up to us, and our current staff working all our daily on HB 363 and getting that broadband office set up, because as we heard, mid-May, there's going to be a referral coming out of the state, and they need to react to that. They need to be applying for some funding right then with their office, so we're hoping to get that person up and running. So thank you very much for your time today, Chair Zapolsky, and I'm happy to answer your questions.
Thank you for watching this video on the Sublime for the 23. We're going to take a brief break before we move on to our next presenters.
Back to the region, and I've lived in Iggy Attic for about 12 years now. get 3 years of operational experience in telecom. A lot of the system here at the day I helped build and some of them managed. We're the technical partner with IBC and Spreadit.
Thank you for allowing us to present a play of our most background project. So, Simon Hex from Circle Sales can have a microwave optical network in a smartphone. But it is a high performance broadband network proposal from the Brazilian region, searching from poles or bandwidth techniques. So, these exercises are just a few photos of our region. Igorgi is located on the southern of Guyana. The word Igorgi actually is a Yucca word that means is area up, and it means like the fruit that's falling in the water. And like the Igorgi, he appears riding to us will be exciting. So, we're a population of about 70 people. We're currently the fourth largest in our district, which is, but it's a long way from my childhood, and we're struggling to keep our school open. But we're also a community that is both forward thinking and striving to advance with our slideshow, our winter runs, our lifting. We run a vast local fitness program. We have brought back dance and singing that was once during the school. And we learned during the pandemic that when our kids had to homeschool and learn how to go home into Zoom meetings, that a lot of our students were falling behind because they couldn't even get out to their daily classes. A lot of them were worried for families who couldn't afford internet or having to go to the school, even though it was closed, which was sitting outside, trying to get online, back to the offices, had to open up. And we were limited in terms of internet, so our kids could keep up with the rest of the world. And that's when they realized that our internet was so just compromised compared to the rest of our family, basically.
I'll cover some of the other slides. As Christina mentioned, we do have a fairly compromised broadband and internet loading API. I can go and go through a little bit of that as well. But the overarching goals of Savvy are to provide 330 unlimited service to rural communities in Bristol Bay. We've you know, as some of the requirements we heard in previous presentations call for, coalitions or combinements of communities to try to make things more cost effective. We have, in our project, we've had a lot of support from the 20 communities in this project, which we believe is kind of a record setting for our area without having any regional corporation involved. So we have letters of support or resolutions from 20 communities in our region to pull this all together. Our goal is to provide the same level of service at the same cost to every subscriber, regardless of where they live in the region. There's definitely disparity in geography and distance from internet centers. And so we recognize that, but we think that as a tribal community, it is only fair to all to have equal access with equal cost. And so that's another one of our overarching goals for SaverNet. We also intend to support existing regional telecommunication jobs and to create new telecommunication jobs in our region. We know that as we roll this out, we will need more people in the region working on this and working to provide support, resource, technical support for problems that we have as we go along. Currently, we ourselves. We've had delays with the much like any of our other programs that we run in the United. But we do recognize that this will be an opportunity to train and develop a workforce in the development industry for our region. We also, I guess that was my last bullet on this slide, but we are, as a village, we've strived to do this in many different avenues and projects. We have our own construction company. We have a hydroponic energy device that we've been working on for a decade. We have wind energy. We're installing and commissioning a battery energy storage system for our diesel generators. And we just have a lot of programs going on that we believe we can help to train local people and regional people in our area. So we're not flying experts in from out of state or out of area, and then we can be more responsive to problems. And that's similar for our senator.
It is a memory of the training program where people being trained and it's really trying to do.
So that's still under development. Thank you for the question. But still under development, and the initial source of training will be through NUSTRA, who we've had a long-standing relationship with and is a regional entity that has the technical expertise to do the training. And at the outset, it will be through NUSTRA that we do the training. So, as I said, we're learning as we go along, but with industry experts and consultants, we have to ask the important questions. How do we become an internet service provider in Southwest rural Alaska? It's not an easy thing to do. We have to figure out how do we get the service to the members first of all, and then how do we get the fiber internet backbone? Everyone's been discussing the middle mile. How do we get that to the communities and back up? The other important piece of this is direct internet access. How do we get access from our region or from our homes to the internet exchange point in Seattle? These are very important and difficult questions to answer. There are a variety of technologies out there, but in response to some of the vending requirements, we feel like the internet backbone is going to be critical for many of the communities in the core. Many of the communities in the Sandy Lake proposal already have fiber running through them via the Terra Southwest project. None of them have fiber to home. And so that's a great starting point for us is that we have fiber running to portals or the mountain PJP and all the villages around the Iliam and Lake subregion down to Naknek or down to Leavenock. And none of these communities that I'm aware of have any access to the fiber except for Tillamook. So, this is a description of what the topology will look like for the network. Again, I am not an expert on this stuff, so if I do have too technical of questions, I will defer to Bob over here, who's my expert. The fiber to the backbone from Leavenock to Billingham, from Leavenock to Chinook Bay will be the big build outs on this as far as middle mile. And then there will be a microwave middle mile to the community of Kalidinik as that just makes sense rather than running fiber over to that area. We intend to have fiber home in all communities. And when we get down to our build out to the Chignix, we would connect with the build that's underway through GCI going on to the Chignix. We would complete the ring protection for both networks. Basically, if you have a ring encircle that region and you have disobedient service somewhere along that ring, you have redundancy to come back around the other way and still provide internet. So that's a huge benefit of our project as well. Our ring protection is very important. Michigan is initially going to provide the DIA for this network. On the Leavenock fiber project, our I mentioned before, they will be our technical experts in this training. So how to do this? As I mentioned before, whenever we do partnerships in place already, we've applied for a DIA grant to cover this build out. That's very aggressive. We have 20 tribal partners involved in this, and we feel like this will improve us in our region for many, many years. We're still working on the legal description of how this will all come together as a tribally based cooperative or consortium or co-op to allow for us to have the most equitable pricing that we can. As I mentioned it before, Michigan telephone will provide vibration business support, and eventually our plan is to transition from them being our operational and business line to having a tribal entity do that, but initially we will need the training and support from the store.
So I have a question. Is the ability to harness this opportunity made in part by the tribal broadband spectrum that was made available to tribes last year?
So that's a good question. Thank you, Madam Chair. We actually recently received our FCC license for the 2.5 GHz broadband spectrum that will play a part in this, but we just received notice last week that we received that license. There was a lot of negotiating with the Slovenian tribe, with Siri, Gornay, and some other consortiums of tribes in the state. So we have a very large area that our 2.5 GHz does overlay. And that will be a component of it, although we weren't able to clarify it for this application through MTAA and for the Seminet project. So we'll have to figure out how that works in the program, but we have received a licensing for that.
So we made it a bit separate.
Right.
So we'll have a follow-up question looking at the previous slide that you had offered. So is the mobile connection to GCI's network? Is the tribal funding that's coming in for the build out within these communities, there's going to be collaboration with GCI's infrastructure?
So, this is about, you have a better idea of how this organization works, but it will still be through NewsDell because NewsDell has the IA access.
So, what we're really talking about here is their system redundancy and robustness. Usually, there's nothing the same as normal. Expectedly, we would start those negotiations until we have funding and then underway on both projects. GCI is already there, we're getting there. I believe that it would be something GCI or the origin of development is more likely to be something interested in because it benefits the ability to access the transport path in the case of a break and then get that full back in the fiber and maintain the viability of the system. Systems, so I don't think it would be anything that's something you see that would be very interested in. But until we have a project underway, we will actually go through the plan.
So, first, on the personal doesn't, I guess, about broadband, would it be accurate to say that the FendMinNet initiative is not supplanting any existing network, but supplementing with additional, I guess, additional resources and efforts?
So there would be some findings from the existing networks, both all these networks that it would be supplying are not able to provide service even to a lesser location. None of these communities have coming back to available right now, so they're all considered unserved.
Thank you so much. Please continue.
Okay, I did mention the DIA, and so we looked at various funding opportunities as well. We know that there are future funding opportunities. We have a large ask to the MTA tribal broadband grant. We're waiting for the awards. As our speaker mentioned, or the customer mentioned earlier, we've only, about $3,500 awards so far. And I understand that we're staffed and have an enormous amount of responsibility to get this done. We are still waiting to hear what our award level is, if we will have an award level. But we realize also that we're set up to apply for other grant opportunities in the future. We've been all the legwork has been a very costly process for us as a village. But we also understand that we don't have the technical expertise. So we don't have the opportunity to learn all the technical parts of this and how this is built. So we do have to hire consultants and hire experts, and there's still has been a great team member. So we're set up for future funding opportunities. If we are fully funded through NCIA, we do plan to pursue other funding to make this happen. And so the funding opportunities are listed there.
I'm sure I'm just curious because you said the awards that have been given so far are in the $500,000 range. I'm hoping that the application you did is substantially more than
that. One of the things that we try to be realistic and cover all bases in our application, and one of the things that we used it as, I guess, from our perspective, as an education piece for the federal government to federal government to see what infrastructure build out in rural Alaska, not just collaborative tech, but sanitary solutions, electric, anything like that, and how expensive it is to build infrastructure in rural Alaska. And so they have a funding ceiling on that application. But if we are to follow the intent, our interpretation of the intent of that application and build a regional network, so I'll go through these as well. These are a little bit more technical, and if you'd like me to speed up, just let me know, and I'll go through some of this. So what is good broadband service? We've discussed some of this in previous testifiers. FCA sequence there is less than 2538 is unserved, and less than 120 is underserved. For reference, I had a data speak test on our web and on our travel office yesterday in Chaotic, and we didn't have 25.3, we had 8.7 download. We have three internet packages there, so we can, there's two different providers, to try to tone down our overage costs. So one to one internet services, you have to go on to one of the next one. And there are actually several residents in Yagiyambik who do the same thing and around our region just to avoid overage costs. And we're seeing that during the pandemic, we're seeing residents paying $800 to $1,000 a month for internet. And that's just to get you where you would get final down and really couldn't use it anymore. So I had a college student from Arizona State going to college from Yagiyambik in his bedroom. And running down to the school in a car, the train was sound and sitting outside the school to make it happen, and it was just not feasible. So the whole pandemic part of things really opened our eyes to where how far behind we are in rural Alaska. So the USDA and our US targets $100 down is a higher goal, and it's in scoring grant applications. Our feeling, as Christina mentioned before, is that if we can have a fiber backbone in place, we can adapt to make this future-proof, to make higher upload and download speeds happen as our internet capacity needs to increase. For reference, there's a bullet that says that recommends 5 megabits per single length to the upstream. We can stream Netflix and Yagiyambik if we would like to put a higher up, though. And if you don't mind waiting for it to spool up and so on, yes.
I've not had the professional at Yagiyambik, but I love you. I feel when I have somebody who's in the home about the asking for the
name. We have a small construction camp out there. We have our own construction company, and we have a mobile construction camp. And I've seen bills there in the summer at $1,400 a month just for the internet. We try to get people to not stream movies at night or FaceTime or anything like that, but it's tough to have to pull. So, yeah, it's extremely stressful.
Well, that's it.
actually, what kind of service are you using? Well, you know, as far as what internet services. So right now, our internet services are limited to GCI and Bristol Bay and Dublin. And so we have both of those services. We also have some internet customers and things like that, but that's not very common anymore. At least in our village, I think Yaka has more of this thing. Are you going to answer the question? The next important aspect of the internet is the latency. So on the first one, you can allow transfer speeds indicators, and you can make transfer in the second. Latency measures how long it takes to transit a network. And that's usually measured in milliseconds. We saw some standards on that earlier. We think that CyberNet will be able to exceed any other goals for latency as well. There's variations in latency called jitter. That's also documented when you check your internet speeds. It'll tell you how much jitter you have. It can cause performance issues. So having to spool up Netflix and things like that is all related. Low contention rate. So contention rate is another important aspect of this. There's some math up there if you'd like to go through what we can, but. We're shooting for a 15-to-1 contention rate. So it basically allows more people to be online at the same time to still maintain the level of service that you want. And so with a fiber backbone, we believe that we can accomplish this. I don't get too far into the weeds on this little city like me doing. If I do it, get too far into the weeds, I'll have to go bother. So unrestricted data throughput is another important aspect of this. As I discussed earlier, we get to a certain level of use on our internet, and we are capped at that level. We do get throttled back, but to give you an example, you can't even open an email when you're on a throttled back internet. And so you have to write in to the internet provider, write to them on email and say, please remove the throttle. I don't care what it costs. Unrestricted data throughput is huge for us. Those internet caps that we have are extremely expensive, as I've mentioned before. So data access is the true product that's being sold by an internet service provider. You can build it and have goals to have certain levels of service, but if you can't meet those on your own, then it doesn't really matter. So data access limits are tools used by service providers to mitigate the effects of congestion and high contention rate systems, which is where we are right now. Securing the digital future is how we've titled this one. We feel like our project that we're proposing hits a lot of the points that the Alaska Broadband Task Force report includes. Fiber backbone quality is latency, urban service equivalency, equitable service levels and pricing. So as I said before, we intend to have equivalent pricing for equitable service and pricing for every community and every customer in the Salmon network. We would like to surpass the current business bandwidth targets, understanding that as we go forward in the next 5 or 10 years, we're just going to need more and more capacity and higher speed internet. It's not slowing down, and I don't see it slowing down ever. An important aspect of this project is the creation of Alaska training programs and jobs. Some of them we will have to outsource. Like I said earlier, we will have to start with news channels or technical experts and trainers. We intend to expand beyond that and have our own technical experts throughout the region running into villages who can respond quickly to any problems that we have. And we plan to have a consortium of villages with a training program, and also hope to include that in some of the school programs and some of the CTE programs we're still doing, and just to try to combine forces and get a good training program and so that we're self-sufficient. High level of scalability, we've talked about it again. Our particular solution uses the fiber backbone just because it is scalable to meet future needs. Digital equity for our next generation, so these training and education opportunities are very important to the education of our younger folks. It will allow us to have e-commerce opportunities for the kids that are growing up right now, and for some of us adults who get more tech savvy. But we feel like this is the most equitable way to build out broadband in our region. In our opinion, who better to represent tribes in our region and villages in our region than Inuit or another community in the region? We all look out for each other, and we feel like we are probably the most responsible player for our region. And that's my final slide. I'm going to answer any questions if anyone has any further questions.
On the slide of the existing networks, I just want to understand, I'm sorry if you said I didn't understand, but this network, so the DCI network that exists and whatever the hell can join, that can happen, and then this, then you need to have a separate SAMA network, the SAMA network, so that, for example, in these communities that they served, they have the choice between two different providers, you know, they could choose to have DCI service or they could have
So, currently the Tower Southwest project fiber ends at Leavelock, and you can see it on the survey map there. And that build out came through the Williamsport Paddle Bay, it's over by Beaver Bay. It connects to all the villages shown on that map all in Leavelock. So, the build out for our section of the for the ring would start in Leavelock and then us to that purple line that we've got, it's labeled 7 for post fiber. When that gets down to the Tignac area, that would complete the ring with the GCI fiber that's being built out through the Tignacs from the other side.
This project completes that ring in terms of the fiber, but then the network that's created by it can be used by both providers.
I'm going to pull you in on that one. So, through the chair, I'm going to represent the dark. Yes, it can be understood. The technology is available. You have different mechanisms for network access with business to provide services. So, what Oceanic has done with our own service area, which is to the left side of that map there, show our communities on it. That we engaged in a project to build that fiber that goes from the lab to our service area with the road in terms of looping and get our existing fiber. In partnership with the existing provider GCI, we're creating capacity on that for capacity to the internet exchange fiber scan. That capacity is allowing us to provide services at our site, which enough capacity that we know that we can provide the same level of services to our whole region. It's a large amount of the return direct internet access. And this is a realization of that potential. So currently we have fiber running through our village, but we do not have access to it. So that's kind of where we are right now. It does run the Leavelock, and then from Leavelock, it's microwave. western Alaska, the western part of Alaska. But in Aitken, for example, at my home, I have a PCIOS bandana on my house that shoots over to the front door. Our local contracting company actually installed the fiber and supported the fiber belt from Eagle to Lamelock. We put vaults in strategic locations so that we would eventually be able to connect to fiber, but we've not been able to do that.
If there are additional questions, I'd like to ask the Denver analyst that we had on before today's training.